The Structural Engineering Podcast.
Zach, have you seen any of those NCSCA webinars on AI and structural engineering?
Yeah, I've caught parts of them. Honestly, they've been eye-opening. The way people are experimenting with AI right now, it's clear things are going to change, but it's really hard to predict what the future will look like.
Totally. I've watched a bunch. It just makes me more curious. Like, what does this actually mean for us in a day-to-day basis? What are we supposed to do differently?
Exactly. I mean, it feels like it could go either way. The biggest productivity boost we've ever seen, or just, you know, a bunch of false starts and weird answers.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I actually have a call later today with Stefan from the company AI in AEC. He's one of the people really leading this conversation. But before we talk to the expert, I thought it'd be fun for us to try some AI prompts ourselves. Just see how easy or how painful it is to use these tools.
Okay, I like that. A little experiment. How would I give you an engineering task? Something heavier on the math side, and we'll see if you can coax a reasonable answer out of AI.
Okay, fair. But let's trade. I'll give you more management-y style tasks. These models are technically language processors, after all, so I figure something text-heavy will be in their wheelhouse.
Deal. Let's keep it simple. Max, here's your task. Design a wood beam for a uniform load. Nothing exotic, just span, species, size, and check the stresses. Can AI get anywhere close the way we would actually do it?
Okay, straightforward beam design. I'll throw it at AI.
Now it's my turn, Max. What do you have for me?
Here's yours. Draft a detailed checklist for managing coordination on a 5-story, high-seismic, mixed-use building project. Think about structural tasks, submittals, sequencing, all of that.
Okay. Checklist for a 5-story project. I'll see what I can do. Talk to you shortly.
Ooh, I've got one more thing for you.
Really?
Did you know that we're reading an AI script right now?
Right now?
Yep. Now I'm supposed to snip in the other parts of this conversation.
Pretty interesting to get that question from you to kind of dive into AI and see what, you know, a 5-story building checklist would look like. Broke it up into some general pieces here, or some larger chunks. So general information, gravity load system, lateral load system, structural steel detailing, foundation system, code compliance, QA/QC coordination. And I thought in a very general, quick checklist, those were pretty good breakdowns. And within that, building use and occupancy classification, some seismic risk stuff, some wind exposure, AFC7 verification. It seemed like it did kind of jump to what are the bigger things you want to check, but it didn't really go into very, very detailed things, which I could have asked more of it to do that. And this was the second iteration of asking for more detail, but I'm sure you can just keep asking more prompts.
All right. So what do we have then? I've got my building. It's done, but I'm a little unsure about its quality. Give me a checklist. Where do I start?
In general, it really picked out the big things that you kind of run into as issues, but they're pretty generic. So within the floor framing, kind of underneath the gravity load system, said composite deck design checked. Well, what does that mean? And it gives parentheses and says stud spacing, slab thickness, reinforcement. So it doesn't break it out into each one, but it may be more as a general piece. And as you probably dive more into asking AI to do more, you could probably get more finite items out of this. It said to verify the dead, live, and superimposed loads. Load path is traced from the deck to the beam to the column to the foundation. I mean, some pretty general things. Deflection limits, which is one young engineers miss a lot. Strength is good, but deflections are missed. Roof framing dove into live and snow. Drainage and slopes and scupper locations were coordinated. Mechanical equipment loads accounted for. Roof diaphragm continuity was confirmed. So it's interesting of like very little on the roof framing. And then as we got into the seismic design, because I asked for a high seismic 5-story building, seismic base shear was calculated. It's kind of funny. Once you just check that it was calculated, not of like what went into it or anything, just that it was calculated, that the R factor, C/D, omega values were correctly applied. And then it said check if it's a brace frame or moment frame building and check the detailing meets ductility requirements, which seems about accurate, kind of what you wanted to look at.
Yeah, I'd say some of those don't make that much sense to check the ductility requirements. But big picture, a checklist is what is the R of the system that you use? And like, you know, these are the larger category items that you just check on a table. And like, yes, I included this. I know the detailing required. And so I'm liking it more or less.
Yeah, and I think if anything, AI is really good at making this as a starting point of especially as a company, ask it to do this, expand on it, and then go through and edit it. You know, one thing I find AI to be really useful for is just a starting point. It is not always accurate. It asks some weird questions, brought up, you know, fireproofing requirements. It's an important thing. Camber, erection tolerances addressed. I mean, these are some things you definitely want to think about. It's just not all encompassing. It's funny when it got to code compliance, is it picked the codes you should use. So it said IBC 2021 reference throughout, ASC 716 load combinations applied, AISC 360 used for steel design, ACI 318 used for concrete elements, ADA and life safety coordination confirmed. And I thought that was an interesting piece. So then the last piece here is QA, QC, and coordination. All structural sheets numbered, titled consistently, notes and legends clearly defined, dimensions, elevations, clash detection with MEP, review of shop drawing requirements, and submittal schedule. So it was a pretty good starting place. It took me a few iterations. The first time I asked it to come up with something, it wanted me, it gave me a defined list of questions or of items, starting with the location of the building. It was kind of broad. It said, is there a steel moment frame? Is there a brace frame? So I started prompting it a little bit more. It said it wanted me to use 4,000 PSI concrete. It wanted me to use A992 for the beams and steel. It wanted me to use ASTM A615 grade 60 rebar and 22 gauge galvanized deck. So it was really interesting how it kind of told me what it wanted me to use instead of more of a checklist as I asked it to.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking about. It's like, it didn't ask what exposure of concrete you might expect. It was just, you better use the number 4,000 because this is what I'm using. So that's not a picture, but it's something.
Yeah, depending on what you're designing, it's not right. So,
for mine, you asked me to look at sizing a wood joist spanning an unknown distance. So kind of a broad idea here, but just like, can I make an Excel calculator that looks at a wood joist, specify the grade and the type of timber, does the DCR of this demand capacity ratio that this can provide sit in the ballpark of what we might expect and what we might see out of a more standard software like Enercalc, for example? What do you think, Zach? Could it do this? Could it produce an Excel for me? I guess you can probably also tell by the way I'm using my voice here. What do you think it's going to produce?
I think it's going to produce a starting point, but I think you're going to have to do a lot to it, or you're going to have to give more input to AI to create this sheet.
Yeah, so it laid out a really nice spreadsheet. It has multiple pages, and it links to connect all of them, but many of the cells that were referenced, so it like needed to call on the grade of the wood, and it was referencing an incorrect wood characteristic. So it was getting kind of an answer, but it was a totally incorrect answer. So a weird, not quite correct. So it didn't really work. I forced out a DCR just to know what this number is, but it was not in the ballpark of what you might expect. So it laid something out. I think if you wanted to use this for that idea, like to make a spreadsheet, it would be a great starting point, but it's not going to get you there, and you need to make sure that all these numbers are right.
Well, I think we did some learning, but that's usually what I say when I don't end with an answer. I do think we need an expert. For the real side of this episode, I get to talk with Stefan from AI in AEC about how we can speed up on this learning process and any tactics that would help us. I think this one, I can leave to the professionals.
Hello, everybody.
Let's do it.
Nice to have a new podcast where we're going to talk about AI in structural engineering, and I look forward to sharing my thoughts. For those of you who are maybe new and don't know my work, my name is Stepan. It's a weird name, but it's a Croatian version of Stefan. I go by Stefan. And yeah, my story is that I was a bit born and raised in Croatia. I lived in Denmark for 10 years and recently moved to the US about 6 months ago. And what I do is I have a company called AI in AEC. And what we offer for architects and engineers and construction professionals is AI education. Our courses have sold in 67 countries. We have more than 600 students. And this has just been a blessing to have this business and to go on podcasts like this. So thank you, Max, for inviting me.
Really excited that you're on here. I have a lot to learn about AI in AEC. And when I was looking into this, yours was the first pool of information that popped up. So thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Of course.
And I'll say, I'm definitely going to say your name as Stefan many times. So I'm glad that you just set that out, that it is okay. But yeah. I want to learn how you got into combining AI and AEC. Were you starting in an AEC field, or did you start as a computer scientist? Where did the blend come from?
Yeah, so maybe I can go back to my education, because I was educated as a constructing architect. That's kind of a specialized course in Denmark, or actually in Scandinavia. And what the course offers is you learn both about architecture and engineering, because the belief is that there's always this clash between the two professions, you know?
Yes.
So
this is correct, though.
yeah. You know, the architects are always, these engineers don't know anything, or, you know, they're too rigid, and engineers are always like, these architects want crazy ideas and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, somebody, I guess, in Scandinavia, like maybe a couple of decades ago, thought of this new course, or new kind of university course, that's something in between. It's a more technical version of an architect, or a more design-oriented version of an engineer. So that's what I studied for my bachelor, and for my master's, I finished for a global BIM manager. So, and that's the story of how I got in the industry. And then for years, I was working as a BIM coordinator. I figured that, you know, technology is something I'm really good at. And I worked for both on the construction side. I built a huge bridge in Turkey. Then I worked for Europe's largest engineering firm called Sweco, 22,000 people, as a structural BIM coordinator. I also drew MEP, modeled stuff, electrical works, whatnot. And then for a couple of years, I was at BIG, Bjarke Ingels Group. If somebody's an architect, they probably know BIG. But if not, it's a famous architectural studio. So
it's a wonderful architectural studio.
Yeah.
That is a really exciting career. So
yeah, thank you.
That's great to hear.
And maybe just to reflect on, like, because you asked me, how did I get into AI specifically?
Yeah.
Well, this is something that, you know, it's weird for me to say, because I've never expected to have a business such as I do. When I was, you know, when ChatGPT came out, like, at that point, I was still at BIG, and I just saw that this is something magic, man. This is something that's going to change our industry. And then, you know, it's not only ChatGPT. I started noticing that there's a lot of startups in this space already, such as Swap, such as Finch, such as Snaptrude. You know, all of these startups were popping up on my browser, on my LinkedIn. And I was like, man, this is so cool. Let me make a list of all of these apps. And I really thought it's going to be me and my colleagues chatting about it, you know, navigating over this. And what that database, I called it the AEC AI Hub. I made it in Notion. It's free. And over time, this kind of went viral on LinkedIn, and it became the world's largest database of AI tools for the AEC industry.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's still free. It's still the world's largest database. So if anybody's interested, they can just go to my website, ainac.com. But that's the thing, you know, like, I just never, like, because I saw all of this innovation, I saw all of this research out there. And, you know, after researching all of these companies, reaching out to them, people on LinkedIn really started supporting this. They were like, this guy is really cool for sharing all of this, you know, for free. So that's how the whole journey got started, I guess. So, yeah.
That is exciting. So we'll definitely share the link in the show notes for this. So if anyone's curious, they can just scroll down. I think a lot of my questions are going to be sort of broad, and also that I do not understand AI in AEC very well. I've used ChatGPT for some coding and some easy problem solving, but could you help define AI in the context of AEC? What do you see? How do you expect the AEC field might use AI in the near term, and then maybe 10 years from now? How do you think it will integrate with our workflow?
that's a many questions at once.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, no worries. I'll answer everything. I'm just like, you know, I'm giving it some thought. Currently, where I see AI and AEC as like having the most impact is in design automation. I think many people saw this as well, because like, instead of, I mean, both from the design side, meaning like, you know, you're designing a building, you're designing a highway, you're designing whatever, you know, like making drawings and so on, but also from the business administration side, as we all know, like we all use ChatGPT. So we know that we don't have to think of, I don't know, new emails, new offers, new whatever, research, you know, even anymore. We can just ask ChatGPT. In terms of, you know, but when I speak with architects and engineers, they're all looking at drawings. They're all looking at BIM models. So I think that AI is really good in this. It's entering this field a lot stronger as months go on. But again, it's all about design optimization and design automation currently. In terms of the future, should I go on?
Yes, please.
Yeah. In terms of the future, as you know, like nobody knows what's going to happen with this technology. But I think it's both good and bad. Like, you know, I think it's good for those who understand the power of AI and who start learning it today. But I think it's really bad for those who neglect it or are like, you know, maybe too busy to learn about AI. Because we all have deadlines. We all have, you know, things we need to deliver soon. And we're all, I'm going to take care of it next month. I'm going to apply for a course next month and so on. Because I do have a fear. Maybe I can just put it out there because, you know, you were inviting me for this podcast. And I was thinking, like, AI instructional engineering, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And I was like, maybe this job is going to vanish, you know, or like most of this job is going to vanish.
I think that is the big fear, right? And it will change, certainly. I do not think it'll vanish, but it will change.
I think so too, man. Because, I don't think it's going to vanish fully, completely, but if it's going to change, because what AI is actually allowing, or what AI, the impact of AI on our industry is actually moving the value proposition from us doing the work, meaning doing the current work of like, let me calculate these loads. Let me put it all on drawings. Let me send a new BIM model. Let me add this to a BIM model, whatever it is. You know, this is our current value proposition because owners, developers, people paying us actually to do our work don't know this and can't do this. They can't design a building without models and without drawings. So they need us to add our value through this. But then you have AI that can take your drawings or take your ideas and generate models in seconds. And then you're like, okay, where's the value proposition? Where the value proposition, in my opinion, is in risk management and in those things that humans are good at. And those things are communication, managing, coordination. So what I'm saying here is that the value chain will change from you just like doing mundane tasks, such as adding dimensions to a drawing, adding tags to a drawing, to something where you're like, okay, I need to coordinate this. I need to put my signature here because people will live in this building. People will use this data center. People will use this hospital. So I need to make sure that what AI produced is of high quality and I can safely put my name on that. So we will become more of a quality assurance, so to speak, than actually punching in numbers and punching in dimensions and, you know, so on, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. And I'm sure it looked a little scary from the RAM structural system or any of these large 3D models, right? We're taking what used to be lots of individual calculations, hand calculations at a time, and making a model that will run every beam and the lateral system, and it supplies wind and seismic loads. So it's a bit of a handoff, but the engineer always has to be aware of what's happening, review the documents, and so moving more towards reviewing what the computer is putting out, but I don't know. It's not exactly surprising. I heard an NCSCA talk on AI, and the presenter was pushing that AI will affect the industry more by people that don't learn how to use it now, right? It'll affect lots of industries, but the people that'll take the biggest hit are the people that are avoiding it right now, as you said, versus the structural engineer that knows how to use AI in 5 years will be in a much better position than the engineer that neglected it until they needed to take a look.
Exactly.
What do you think, so for now, all right, I know I asked about what it is currently and what it might be in 10 years. Mm-hmm. How do you see a practical use case for AI instructional engineering that's working right now?
Yes, there's many, but I think that the most important thing to say is design optimization. So, for example, you have these AI in structural engineering today is not as widely adaptable, I would say, as it's in architecture. In architecture, you can do renderings, you can do material studies, you can do reports, you can do site studies. In engineering, it's a lot more limited, but because engineering is a lot more deterministic in its nature. This means that, you know, AI, in, like when we say AI, we typically mean LLMs, but AI in general is a probabilistic technology in most cases. So what this means that, you know, you're going to ask it, what is 7 plus 7? I mean, it's going to tell you it's 14 because it's a simple equation. But if you ask it the more complicated stuff, it's rarely going to tell you it's 14. It's more going to tell you it's between, like the correct answer is between 12 and 16.
Yes.
Right? So you as an engineer, you're like, oh, wait, I can't do much with this. I need the exact number. So what happens there is that, that's why I say design optimization, is that in those designs that are flexible, that you can calculate maybe like what is the design that has the least amount of carbon footprint that's, you know, left. This can be calculated. AI can really help you with that. You know, also with like automation of repetitive modeling and documentation, because no matter of your, let's say, structural engineering, when it comes to calculation, you still need to give your data, give your information, give your knowledge through a piece of paper or a BIM model, right? And all of that modeling takes time. All of that documentation takes time. So what you can do right now, you can just like generate that document from nothing, generate that BIM model from nothing. So this is what it's currently good at, I think.
Do you think we'll see AI integrated in the software that we use or a separate platform? I don't know how to ask that question directly, but will we pick up the RAM software that I already mentioned? Will RAM sort of have an integral AI component and we can ask questions and direct the movement of the model? Or will there be a separate software that talks?
I think it's going to be both. I'm speaking because, so first of all, I can answer this question to the best of my knowledge, but of course, I'm not a software vendor. So I can't tell you, you know, Revit will have this new AI feature. I can't tell you this because I, you know, I'm not a software vendor. But what I can tell you is that our software that's mainly used in our industry, such as Rhino, Grasshopper, Revit, RAM you mentioned, or robots, or whatever, most of them are old, meaning that they're typically produced in late 90s, if not early 2000s. And they are not capable of handling a lot of AI on top of them, let's say. In most cases, again, I can't speak, like I'm trying to generalize here, but of course it depends on case by case. So of course, these companies, these software vendors are not stupid. They know the world has been moving for the last 3-4 years in the AI direction. So I do see already that some of them have AI features integrated. And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing, not only from the like, okay, they're just following the train, but I also think that, you know, because most people already know these apps. So just having an AI addition to something you already do is much easier. But I think that there will be coming other apps that have AI easily integrated within them because they're newer and it's easier to integrate this with a new software. So, I can't speak on behalf of course, Revit or Tekla or, you know, tools like that. But I think that it's both cases. There will both be AI within all older apps, so to speak, and some completely new apps that we don't even know about. So
That makes sense. And I imagine it's hard to make predictions because we don't know what the future will look like. And it could go many ways.
Exactly.
You certainly mentioned many of these things, but do you think it will replace a component of our typical workflow or just augment it? Now you mentioned like reviewing dimensions. There's no need for someone, an engineer, to go through and lay dimensions on a plan. There might be a point where you can just direct an AI to do that. But yeah, do you see it in the near term future? It's hard because I want to put a timeline to any question here.
Yeah.
But will it be a component of our design or will it augment our entire design?
I think at the start, it's going to be a component of the design. This is what we're already seeing today. So most of my students, let's say, in my courses, or most of my clients that I consult about AI implementation and strategy, they're mostly looking for that. Like, we're not looking for a completely new universe, meaning that I'm not going to tell them, okay, there's this new Revit, whatever that name is, and just use that because nobody's using that because you have something called network effect. It's like, why are you, do you have Facebook?
I don't.
You don't, actually. Okay. But yeah, I do. I do. And the reason I have it is not because I enjoy Facebook anymore. It's because everybody has it. Like, so if my friends that are my age or somebody invites me for an event, they're on Facebook, so they're going to invite you there, right? Okay, you are probably a special specimen in that sense, yeah.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
but it's a network effect. What I meant by that is that, you know, in Revit's case, everybody's using Revit. So if you start using something new, how are you going to move all of your 15 partners and subcontractors or whoever to a new app in a matter of like a one day, you know? Those things take time. So that's why I think it's going to be a part of design. But I think what you need to think about is what everybody says here in the States, you know, follow the money. So if you follow the money that we work for as architects and engineers is typically coming from developers, from real estate developers, from even GCs that might hire you as a subcontractor. And of course, if you follow the money, it's in their interest to, of course, pay you as little as possible to do the work, right? So if their interest is to always choose the lowest bid, or typically choose the lowest bid, it's in your interest to lower your costs.
Yes.
So what I mean by that is that where I foresee the future, and this is we're talking maybe 3, 4, 5 years down the line and longer than that, where I foresee things happening is that, you know, I actually spoke with one data center developer this day, actually today I spoke with him, and he told me, hey, do you see any platform where I can start as a developer and just send those drawings, send those plans to my engineers? So at least it's like, I don't know, 10% done or maybe 50% done. I don't need 90%, but I need at least like a 50% done, or again, 10%. So my engineers don't start from scratch, or my architects don't start from scratch. Is that they start at some level. So I think we're going to move more into this direction, because real estate developers are going to try to save money. So they're going to hire a company, or they're going to do it themselves, like where they can do the first 30% of the design, and then engineers and architects take over, if that makes sense.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
I'm going to step back a moment. I know my questions are sort of in a funny order here, but I'm thinking I don't know the statistic of how many people work for a firm that's much smaller, but I imagine most firms are under 10 people or 10 to 20 people. So maybe they don't have a strong technology side. For people in that sort of market, what would be the easiest entry to an AI component that they can integrate into their workflow to start thinking about this? So, and this might be a
very small firm.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, ChatGPT for sure. Don't go for Copilot. I think it's a bit, don't go for it. That's what I would say.
Yeah. And this would be for contract style questions. So not exactly design, but any language.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the first thing that I ever asked ChatGPT is, I am a constructing architect, or I work at this company. What can I use you for? Give me 100 different ideas. That was the first thing I ever asked ChatGPT. What can I use you for? So I think that's the first question everybody should ask ChatGPT.
Yeah.
So, and then when it told me the 100 different ideas, I was like, okay, 50 of these don't make sense. 40 of these I don't need. But 10 of them, there's something to that. Let me explore more. Good. So, yeah.
I imagine most people have kind of come to the similar terms. But now when I ask a ChatGPT question, and I really do want a lot of answers, I'll ask for 100 answers, like you said, and I'll know that only 10 will be reasonable, but those 10 are going to be unique and worth reading.
Yeah, exactly.
And let's talk about sort of the barriers that we have in AI integration right now. Okay. Do you see, you know, any key barriers, entry points that are hard for firms to overcome currently, and how we might get through them?
Yeah, that's a great question, man. There's a few. There's, of course, like, you know, but typically the discussions that when I go to conferences or when I speak with people, discussions evolve around like data privacy, about training bias, about hallucinations. And to be honest with you, I probably have a different take on that, because I get tired from these discussions, because if you understand technology, you understand how easily they are solvable. Their data is easily encrypted. Training bias is, I wouldn't say easily avoided, but it's avoidable. Hallucinations are a part of this technology. So I think that in most cases, people are either repeating what they heard from other conferences, or are maybe even just, don't get me wrong, but some people are just lazy, and it's easier to discuss about data privacy problems then actually it is to see, okay, like what is actually there about my data? Why do I want to protect it? I mean, not why do I want to protect it, but like, how can I fix that problem? Because if you ask that question, you can easily fix it. Like all the data that you put on your cloud, on your OneDrive, or if you use with AI, it's typically encrypted. Those companies can't access it typically in like 95% of cases. They can't even access it. So of course, I'm generalizing here, but I can't speak more specific, you know. So this is, I think that let me tell you a story here. So I started my business last year in February. So 2024 February, I started. Okay. And I started and I was like, okay, I'm going to make a course. And then after courses, I could do some workshops, some consulting, you know. But like, I'm going to educate people on AI. That was my idea. And this is still what I do. And then I was like, but people will learn AI either through my courses or through other, you know, sources within like a couple of years. That's what I thought back then, you know. And I was like, in 2 years, I will need to figure out something else because everybody will know how to use AI, how to implement it. Everybody will know everything, you know. So I was like, my business is doomed. But okay, I can, you know, do it today. And yeah. Then I went to my first workshop. And on my first workshop, I had like 50 people. On how to use AI, what I teach people on my workshops is how to save 12 hours a week with AI, personal productivity. Yes. And then on my first workshop ever, there was this lady, and I like because back then I could give everybody access to ChatGPT. Well, like I just put my email and my password. It's not possible to do it anymore. But back then I could, and I gave my email and my password, and I thought, well, you know, I just said to people, use this, log in, and let's do some exercises. And I gave people, like, you know, time to log in. Minute 29, there's a hand that goes up. There was a lady, and she's like, where do I click again? Which app do I go to? I'm like, really?
Oh, no.
It took you half an hour with, like, the QR code with like chatgpt.com or whatever, you know, with like login details, and you're still struggling to log in. And that's where I realized that many people, I mean, this is a specific example and probably a special specimen, as I've said, but I know that, you know, many people, I think it's mainly on us. I think it's on us. We are the main inhibitor of AI. We are the main problem. Our skills and our knowledge is the main inhibitor of AI implementation. That is my belief. So this is going to take time.
I want to ask, so I know one of the items that your company does is to help generate AI apps. Can you discuss that a little bit and what you're helping produce and what has been successful so far? I just want to learn a little bit about the AI apps that you've thought about.
Yeah, sure. So this is, let's say, a smaller part of what we help people with. Again, it's mainly AI education and consulting and like strategy. And then I have another firm that I opened recently. It's NeoStack. It's called neostack.ai. You should check it out. Yes. It's really good. Because, I mean, it's really good. Like,
we'll certainly link it. But
like when it comes to developing AI apps, that's a funny thing, you know, because like there's this term called vibe coding, and this is where you code apps through natural language. So you just write, okay, I want an app that checks my RFPs and produces, you know, offers for clients. I want an app that, like, for example, we built an app internally for my business that's called Flow, and that has all of my clients or all my pipeline or my expenses, what my employees are doing, you know, what their times are, like an internal timesheet tracker, so to speak, with like a pipeline added to it, let's say, because I said, like, why would I pay for something like this outside and try to learn their application? Let me make something that's custom for me, that like I know where I want to click, I know how I want it to look like. So we used something called Lovable. If people don't know, it's lovable.dev or blink.new. Those are kind of platforms where you, through natural language, can develop apps. Now, this is both amazing and kind of hard to do. Why? because it's amazing because you can, like, you know, typically you can even with a single prompt, I mean, typically it takes like a few prompts to get somewhere, you know, you can develop apps, and it's like we have a developed app that's amazing. We're using it internally. But if it's used externally, we typically want like higher security measures than what this platform offers. So you still need like a developer. You still need a development firm to use AI instead, you know, and to check all of that. Because think of it like this. What happens is that for a simple app that maybe just like takes your RFPs and produces offers, you can get like 500,000 lines of code. Whereas a senior developer would do it in 60 lines.
Yeah.
Because think of it like ChatGPT. What it does is a lot of fluff. You ask it to build me this app, and it comes with all of these descriptions that you don't need, all of these code lines that you don't need. So, and, you know, whereas a senior developer would know exactly what you need. So that's why its AI development currently is really good at some things. And of course, you can use it then to clean itself, but it's not really that smart yet. So it's like, you know, it's both good for some things and it's really bad for, like, if you want more serious apps, you still need a developer, in my opinion. So
that makes sense. Since you've sort of been in touch with AI, and I'll use ChatGPT as my reference point here, but now we're on to ChatGPT 5. Have the jumps been really large in your perspective, and how they're helping AEC, basically how your company is using the advancements in AI? Has it felt like big steps?
Both yes and no. I think that the ease of use definitely leveled up, but the nature of like what you're doing, like, it's a bit faster. It's like you're still doing the same things. So it's like both yes and no. What I mean by that is that we had a problem before that most people don't even realize, I believe. You know, most of my students didn't realize, you know, until they studied, right? So what I mean by that is that you had something developed, like, or that's like an innovation that happened within AI models, is that they went from being responsive. Like, you know, before, when you would ask a question, you would immediately get an answer that was generated for you, to reasoning models. Now, do you know what reasoning models are?
No, I don't.
So let me give you an example. You're looking to buy a new car, okay? Or a new bike, whatever. Yeah. And you live in a certain place. I'm going to use my example, okay? I want to buy a new bike, and I live in L.A., and I'm 6'11". I'm actually very tall. But I'm 6'11 and a half. So I need a specialized bike. So what if I ask a question to a typical non-reasoning model? What I mean here is like 3.5 or 4.0 or models like that from ChatGPT. I would get an answer just like, you know, I would ask like, give me 10 stores. This is just going to give me 10 bike stores. But a reasoning model will reason with itself. What that means is that it's going to say, I would say, I need a new bike. And instead of giving me 10 stores, it's going to think, hey, okay, I know that this guy is 6'11 and a half, so I can't send him to every store. I need to check the stock on every store here. And only 3 of these 10 stores that I found have bikes for bigger guys, you know. So I need to find like a customized, you know, version of a bike. There's a customized version of a bike that's pink. Maybe my you know, the user doesn't like pink. It's like it's reasoning with itself. It's trying to reason to give you the exact answer you need, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. That's a very exciting change.
Yeah, it is.
And then I can see that being a huge one.
Yeah, so what happened then is that you had this in ChatGPT, but you needed to know how to select it. So in ChatGPT before, you had like 4.0 and 0.3 models. 0.3 being the reasoning model and 4.0 being the so-called responsive model. It's just responding immediately to what you ask it, but it's not really smart. So what happened now with ChatGPT 5 is that because people didn't know. People didn't know the difference between models. It was hard to choose. So what ChatGPT 5 introduced is it can automatically choose the best model for your question. So if you ask it, I'm looking for a new bike, it's going to probably, like, you know, it's typically giving you two answers. It's going to give you a quick answer if you want, or it's going to, like, say, thinking longer for a better answer. So what I suggest to people, if they want this longer answer, and this is typically used for, like, mid to harder, like, you know, tasks, I would just say, find me a new bike in LA. I'm this and this guy. I need this and this, like, you know, a bit of context. And then I would add a sentence that just says, think hard. And by adding those two words, I'm ensuring that it's going to use this thinking model instead of the responding model, if that makes sense.
It does. Man, this is a very intricate software platform.
Yeah.
Could you give an example problem that maybe a younger engineer that's getting into structural field can use AI to help solve the problem and, you know, help both learn about AI and learn about structural engineering?
That's a great question. Of course, I am biased here because what my company does is sell AI courses. So
That's perfect, though. I mean, this is what I want to learn about.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'll tell you that, but then, of course, if you want to use the example of ChatGPT, because I'm like that. Like, I'm not here to sell people stuff. I'm here, like, if people want, they're going to find what I do and, maybe have, like, that kind of white glove, I think it's called in English, like white glove, like procedure where somebody walks them through and teaches them about AI and what it is and how do you save all of those hours per week. But if somebody's, for your specific question, starting out and just wants to learn about what is out there and get a general answer, because ChatGPT typically is a general assistant, it's not a specialized assistant, I would say just like brain dump your thoughts into ChatGPT. Say, I'm this and this guy, I work for this, or gal, I work for this and this company, I work on these kind of projects. And something new that you can do in ChatGPT is called study mode. You can turn on study mode where you can, it can create a syllabus for you. It can create a course for you. It can create something. I will say it typically sucks. It's still very early. But if there's an option for that, yes. So what you're going to get in the end is like a general answer of what AI is and how it can be used, which is pretty, I mean, it's okay for some things. But if you want something more specialized, some more nuanced, then of course I would suggest checking out my courses.
Yeah, and let's, as we're closing down here, tell me about the courses a little bit. I want to know, you know, what age bracket would be best suited for the course, or is this broader?
I think there's no, it's from, like Lego cubes. It's like from 9 to 99, right?
Yes.
It all depends on your mindset. So I have two courses currently, and I'm working on a third one. But the courses are called Discovering AI in AC and Mastering AI in AC. Now, Discovering and Mastering has everything that Discovering AC has. So Discovering AI in AC is, let's say, a starting course, a beginner's course, that takes you from zero to like an AI, I wouldn't say hero just yet, but I would say a really like knowledgeable person. Because what it takes you through is we first immediately start with ChatGPT Masterclass, how to set it up, how to ensure that you're not using your data, how to prompt. This is very important for everybody. How to, create images, work with Excel, with ChatGPT, and so on. So it's really, really from the basics. Most people know this. But then we go on through AI theory. So meaning, what is even AI? Why doesn't it give you the exact answer you need? And if it were to give you an exact answer you need, it would be a broken technology. So why is it like, always at least like 90 to 95% correctness, so to speak? So we explain that. We also explain some of the problems that we discussed earlier of why companies are not implementing it, like training bias, hallucinations, and how to mitigate those. And then we have a whole range of like product demos and app demos that people can use, creating presentations, creating documents, creating websites, creating whatever, apps even, to be able to save 12 hours a week. So that's Discovering ANAC. And it really packs a punch. It really like has a lot of stuff inside, and I really recommend people to check it out. For the second one, Mastering AI and AC, this is for, let's say, those who want to be and become AI experts. So it has everything that Discovering AI and AC has, plus how do you implement AI? I share some case studies. I saved a client of mine, a 250-person firm, $4.5 million through AI implementation.
Wow.
Yeah. Because they were wondering, there's all of these AI solutions, like what do we do, how do we choose, how do we pilot stuff? So they were all wondering all of that, and then they called me, and we worked together. We still work together, and their savings are $4.5 million through 2 to 3 years. So it's projected savings. But yeah, you can really save a lot. So this is all of these case studies, all of the implementation suggestions on how to approach this. Is it from bottom up? Is it top down? How to strategize, how to create an AI policy, checking all of the apps that are available out there in the AC, or most important ones, 150 cases. This is what's done within Mastering AI in AC. So yeah, that's those are the two courses. And the third one, I probably we can speak about it another time because it's not developed yet. I'm still working on it.
Perfect. Well, I look forward to hearing that. I'm thinking of, you know, the younger engineer again, like you're 1 year out of school. A lot of your initial tasks are to run a beam size, you know, an easy calculation, easier and a more direct item. When someone in that position, do you think they could still save some amount of time a week, like this 12 hours a week? Is that more word style tasks? If most of your job is calculation based, do you think you can make efficient platforms to do that quicker?
That's a good question. So yeah, listen, I've like when I've been a junior in my career, I've been a junior. I always started like with BIM, you know. So I did BIM for structural engineering. So, but it's hard for me to speak for somebody who started as a structural engineer and junior.
Yeah.
So, because I don't know those exact tasks, but I do think that, you know, AI can help you regardless. But I also think that going through some things manually yourself is good for you, you know.
Yeah, for an educational point, it's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, you also always need to be aware of the thing that, you know, we all use a phone, but not many people know how a phone is actually built. We all use a computer, and who knows how a computer is built? You don't start from scratch. You just start as a user of that thing. So, I think it's the same and similar for like future generations. Like people are often afraid, they're going to like lose knowledge about this. I'm like, they probably don't even need it. Like, you know, like I was in my high school, I was starting to learn how to program. And we were like, if A equals B, then B equals A. Like, you know, all of these like very simple Python calculations. And I was like, man, this has been solved. Let's move on. Like, you know, like, why do I need to learn, you know, all of this?
Too from fundamental.
Yeah, too fundamental. Exactly. I think it's sometimes too fundamental. So yeah, I think it really depends on the situation somebody's in. Understand it. Like, listen, if you want to become a world expert at something, I think it's good to have a basic understanding of the fundamentals. But if it's really necessary, that's hard for me to say. You know, I don't have a fundamental understanding of a computer, and I'm still an expert at using a computer, right? But I do have a fundamental understanding of AI, so that's why I can teach it, right? So I think that's where the difference is, I guess.
Okay, well, Stefan, thank you very much for joining me and helping me learn a little bit about AI. I know I have a lot to go. I will link everything in the show notes down here, so if anyone wants to learn a lot more, I think you're probably the best platform that I found online to learn about AI and AEC. So
I appreciate it. I think you're underestimating yourself. I think that, you know, people like yourself who are out there willing to learn, asking questions, those are the ones who are going to persevere. Those are the ones who have a successful future in front of them. So thank you so much for the invitation. And yeah, listen, I always tell people, don't believe me, just believe my clients or students. I have a lot of customer testimonials on my website, and I always say that God has blessed me more than I deserve in my life. Which I really believe. So if anybody's interested in learning about AI, learning about my work, I share a lot of free work as well, both from the database and the AI demo days where we interview app vendors to check out. We have a lot of structural engineering as well. So just go to ainac.com and everything's going to be clear there. So yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Max.